reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 16, verse 1. Translation. King Parikshit said to Shukadev Goswami, O Brahmana, you have already informed me that the radius of Bhumandala extends as far as the sun spreads its light and heat, and as far as the moon and all the stars can be seen. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, it is stated that the planetary system known as Bhumandala extends to the limits of the sunshine. According to modern science, the sunshine reaches Earth from a distance of 93 million miles. If we calculate according to this modern information, 93 million miles can be considered the radius of Bhumandala. In the Gayatri Mantra, we chant, Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah. The word Bhur refers to Bhumandala. Tat Savitur Varanyam. The sunshine, this means, the sunshine spreads throughout Bhumandala. Therefore, the sun is worshipable. The stars, which are known as nakshatra, are not different suns, as modern astronomers suppose. From Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 21, we understand that the stars are similar to the moon. Nakshatranam aham shashi. Like the moon, the stars reflect the sunshine. Apart from our modern distinguished estimations of where the planetary systems are located, we can understand that the sky and its various planets were studied long, long before Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled. Shukadeva Goswami explained the location of the planets, and this indicates that the information was known long, long before Shukadeva Goswami related it to Maharaj Parikshit. The location of the various planetary systems was not unknown to the sages who flourished in the Vedic age. Om Anjanatimirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Sitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Sri Radha Giridhari Lala Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Sham Sundar Ki Jai Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai Sri Sri Gornitai Ki Jai. Translation. King Parikshit said to Shukadeva Goswami, O Brahmana, you have already informed me that the radius of the Bhumandal extends to the as far as the sun spreads its light and heat, and as far as the moon and all the stars can be seen. So Prabhupada makes 2 points in the purport of this verse. First point, he compares and contrasts the calculations of the modern scientists and the calculations of the ancient scientists. Modern scientists means Newton, Galileo, Einstein, etc. And the ancient scientists means the great sages and seers, Parasara Muni, who wrote the Hora Shastra, and Vyasadeva, Narada Muni. These are the ancient scientists, the eternal scientists. Bhagavatam Srila Prabhupada refers to Narada Muni not only as a scientist, but an astronaut. He's a scientist and an astronaut. He says that Narada Muni is the eternal spaceman. He's the eternal spaceman, and he's traveling throughout the universes. Bhur, Bhuvah, Svah. Here, in this verse, we're hearing about Bhumandala. But this is Bhumandala, but then there's 14 planetary systems, there's 7 planetary systems above the earth, and there's 7 below. Those Bhur, Bhuva, Swa. So Narada Muni travels everywhere. So he is a liberated spaceman. He can travel anywhere. So he is also a scientist. And he has also heard from a scientist. He has heard from Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the Adi Kavi. The word Kavi means scientist. It means poet. It means intelligent one. So a scientist, the very word science, derives its origin from the word skio. Skio is a Greek or Latin word which means to know. So science means knowledge. And a scientist means one who knows. One who knows what? Well, he knows everything. This is the real science. The past, the present, the future, the cause of all causes. This is real science. So Prabhupada used to say they're not scientists, they're cheaters, the modern scientists, because they don't know past, present, and future. They simply speculate. So here in this verse, we're hearing that the modern scientists or modern astronomers who are posing themselves as scientists, they are saying that the stars are independent luminaries. Each star is like a sun. It is having nuclear fusion on its surface and creating so much heat energy and light energy. And each star is like a nuclear reactor emanating its own light and sun, just like the sun. A sun planet is like a huge nuclear reactor where there's fusion and fission or whatever it's called going on at tremendous rates and intensity. And by the chemical reactions of all these nuclear explosions on the surface of the sun, it's creating heat and light throughout the whole universe. This is their explanation. And like the sun, there are millions of stars that are just like that. This is the view of the modern scientists. But Prabhupada doesn't accept that. He accepts the view of the ancient scientists, Brahma, the original scientist, Vyasadeva, Narada Muni, and their opinion is different. And who is the original, the origin of all sciences, even the origin of the Adi Kavi? That is Krishna. And he's speaking in Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada quotes him in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that the sun, the stars are simply, the nakshatras, which are the stars, they are simply reflecting the light of the sun. The Shashi. Shashi Suryu. They're simply reflecting the light coming from the sun. So our view is different. This is what one first point Prabhupada's making. The second point he's making in his purport is that he's trying to establish the authenticity and the pervasiveness of the Vedic knowledge. Now, Vedic knowledge simply doesn't deal with meditation or the nature of God or the nature of the soul or the spiritual world or this material existence. But God, the knowledge of God, God consciousness and spiritual knowledge deals with everything. From the phenomenal to the noumenal. From the material to the spiritual and everything in between. From matter to spirit. From, Prabhupada used to say in the early 60s, because the scientists were talking about anti-material particles. And there's scientific discussions of the atom and the electrons and protons and neutrons and quarks and all these other things down there inside the atom. They were talking about anti-material particles. So Prabhupada, he caught this phrase from the scientists, modern scientists, and he incorporated it into the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And he wrote in his Easy Journey to Other Planets, the anti-material particle. The anti-material particle, in other words, that particle, that entity, that unit, which is not material, that anti-material, the opposite of material, that is the spirit or the soul. So he used this term to refer to the spirit soul, the anti-material particle. So, the origin, Krishna is saying himself that this is the actual fact. So either we have a choice. We can accept the viewpoint of the modern scientists who, as we know within our own experience, are always revising their knowledge. If you've ever been to university, they have the 21st edition, and then a 22nd edition, and a 23rd edition of the chemistry book, and the physics book, and the physiology books, and the biology books, and all the science books. They're always revising. New revised edition. Why do they have to revise it? If they're perfect, if they are actually scientists, and they know things as they are, then why do they have to change and revise and improve and supplement their books of knowledge? Astronomy, You look at any book of astronomy, we're discussing astronomy, the study of the astro, the study of the stars and planets and universe. But you look at any university, they're always revising their viewpoint. Oh, we used to think that the universe was expanding, but now we realize it's all contracting and it's being sucked out of a black hole in space or something. A few years ago, they came with a black hole theory, that everything is going into a black hole and everything's coming out of a black hole. Anyone study science, they know these things. So then, in 10 years, they'll have some other thing, the white hole theory, that everything comes from a white light, and everything goes to a white light. And in this way, they're always changing and revising and modifying their viewpoint of the universe. And then stuffing it down our ears and throats, and saying it's knowledge, and saying it's science. It's written by Professor blah, 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 PhD, Nobel laureate. And then next year, someone comes along, defeats him, like one Mooney defeating another Mooney, and he writes the 22nd edition and changes and revises and improves all the theories and ideas and speculations that were contained in the 21st edition. And this is going on in the name of science. And modern, simplistic, bewildered people are accepting this. Yes, they are great scientists. Give him a big award. Give him a big post. Award him a big salary. But the Srila Prabhupada is not so bewildered. He's simply fixed on Krishna. He's fixed on the knowledge of the Vedas. Veda means to know, Veda. So the perfect knowledge is contained in the words of Krishna, which were inscribed by the great sages and realized by the great sages who are the most perfect scientists ever to walk the planet. They are beyond the imperfections of limited beings because they've attained the liberated platform. As long as we're within the platform of the three gunas, we are not liberated. As long as we are affected by ignorance, passion, and goodness, we cannot produce anything perfect. Neither perfect music, or perfect science, or perfect calculations, or understandings, or perceptions of the universe. They will always be imperfect. Therefore, in the Ishopanishad, Prabhupada explains that every living entity, every conditioned soul, not liberated souls, but conditioned souls, they suffer from four defects. Imperfect senses, the tendency to commit mistakes, be illusioned, and the cheating propensity. Because the ego is overriding all the senses. The sense of I am. Ego means this, I am God, that is ego. I am perfect, that is ego. I am infallible, that is ego. So when that ego, which is overriding or sitting above all the senses, when it makes calculations, when the senses make calculations or investigations into the situation of minute matter at the atomic level, or they gaze into the stars and try to calculate what is the distance between the planets, how is this universe expanded or created, they will make mistakes. And then when they make the mistakes because of their imperfect senses of perception, they will not admit it, or they will not see it because of their false ego. They will think, oh, we've made a new discovery. We've discovered this. Let us write about it and establish it as a theory or a law. So this is the first point that Prabhupada makes, that he doesn't accept the modern astronomers who say that the sun planet is 93 million miles from the earth. And Prabhupada he gives them some credit. He says, all right, saying this is the distance of the sun, then that's the radius of the universe, of Bhumandala, because the sun's rays extend from the point of where the sun is from the earth, which is 93 million miles, they extend to the earth, because we see, we feel the sun rays. So that's the radius of the Bhumandala. And then the second point Prabhupada makes in his purport is that this is not new. It's not the new science of astronomy, but this is science has always existed even in the Vedic literatures, like Srimad Bhagavatam. And the ancient sages, they were not unknowing of this knowledge. They were fully aware of it. So we're reading in the Bhagavatam. Mind you, Srimad Bhagavatam is not a treatise on astronomy. It is not a book of science of the stars or planets. It is a book of the science of the soul, the science of God. But nevertheless, Shukadeva Goswami is giving a nice overview of all the different sciences. You will find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find the science of politics, you will find the science of astronomy, and the science of social science. Varnashram Dharma is compared to the modern, what they call social sciences. The organization and systemization of society to run in a harmonious, peaceful way. This is the field of social science. But that is also discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But more important, the science of awakening our love for Krishna, for Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. This is the real science of Bhagavatam. So this verse in this section of Bhagavatam, it's called Description of Jambudvip. Generally, these parts of the Bhagavatam are a little trying for the devotees, a little bit hard for devotees to relish, you could say, because it seems so far away from us. But nevertheless, every aspect of the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to develop our Shraddha, meant to develop our faith. By hearing all the different facets and angles of the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the 12 cantos, it increases and develops our faith till the ultimate point of love, love for Radha and Krishna. We see that it's explained that in the Srimad Bhagavatam there's the external meaning and the internal meaning of every shloka. So the external meaning has its particular purpose, and it is perfect. The Srimad Bhagavatam is complete and perfect and all blissful. One shloka explains that, and we have that experience also. But aside from the external meaning, there's also the internal meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Jiva Goswami Pad, he has given us a wonderful explanation of the Brahma Gayatri. Everyone who takes initiation as a Brahmana, whether he's in a Sri Sampradaya or Brahma Sampradaya or Madhva, any Sampradaya, he receives Brahma Gayatri. This is the Gayatri mantra, Brahma Gayatri, which Brahma received also. Om Bhur Bhuvaswa. And Prabhupada quotes this line, or he quotes part of two lines in the purport of this verse. So Jiva Goswami gives a very nice explanation of this, and he indicates, because here in the verse there's the word Uktastvaya Bhu. The word Bhu is there. This means Bhumandala, the planetary system known as Bhumandala. So Prabhupada refers in the verse, he quotes, he says, in Gayatri mantra we chant Om Bhur Bhuvaswat. And he says the word Bhur in this Gayatri mantra indicates Bhumandala. So that is correct. It does indicate that. And we meditate. The general meditation on Gayatri mantra is to meditate on this all-pervading sun, the eye of the universe, who is energizing and enlivening all the planets through its nourishing rays throughout all the planetary system, Bhura Bhuva Swa. But Jiva Goswami gives a very nice explanation, which, if one was to center his presentation on that, he could give a whole class about how the Brahma Gayatri, which generally is not understood by anyone to indicate Radha and Krishna, but actually how the Brahma Gayatri indicates Radha and Krishna. Moreover, not only Radha and Krishna, but the divine service at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, which is the Siddhanta of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Radha Dasyam. But this is not seen. Generally, this external meaning is there. Because these are very intimate and high topics that our great acharyas have revealed for devotees that are following in their line, for their family members. We are members of the family of Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. This is our family, Gaudiya Vaishnava family. So in the family, secrets are often shared. Mother and father and children, they have secrets. In the family, secrets. And they may not tell anyone outside what they are. In the same way, we have in our family, in our Gaudiya Siddhanta, we have family secrets. We have very wonderful and intimate descriptions. But they're not accessible to the general masses, nor can they understand them. Because they don't have the receptivity, what they call adhikar, the eligibility, or the qualification to actually hear and understand these topics, because they have not accepted the family. In other words, if you come into the family and you're accepted, you may be called an adopted son or daughter. And when you're adopted by the mother and father, that means that you're emotionally accepted. You're physically accepted. And of course, the brothers and sisters, gradually, they will also accept you as their stepbrother or stepsister. So then you can have also access to the secrets. So when a person who's following the spiritual path, he comes into the Gaudiya Vaishnava family, he becomes accepted by Guru and Krishna. And once he's accepted in the family, then he can receive the family secrets from the elder brothers and the great teachers in the line of devotion, the parampara. So therefore, since we're all family, and this is a confidential setting, we can share some of the inner teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada himself, when he was giving prachar, he would present, depending on where he was, there was a tenor. There was a different tenor to the presentation of a Srimad Bhagavatam classes. If one is very analytical and studies Prabhupada's tapes, he can understand how he presented Bhagavatam in India versus how he presented Bhagavatam in Paris or London or New York. There's a definite difference. What he emphasized, what he presented, is different. So in the same way, in this verse, Prabhupada chooses a couple points. So we are duty-bound as Prabhupada's followers to always discuss Prabhupada's purports, not to use class for a political forum or something, but to discuss his purports. Because this is the gift of the Acharyas. So Srila Prabhupada, he's mentioning here about these two points we mentioned. And the final point we wanted to mention is the contribution from Jiva Goswami. Because he says that Bhur Bhuva Swa, this represents the three levels of the existence. Just like Bhur Bhuva Swa. Bhur is the earthly planet, is the middle. Then you have the middle and upper planets in the universe. There's planets below the earth, there's planets on the earth is in the middle, and planets above. So this represents the body, mind, and intelligence. And when we're meditating on Brahma Gayatri, we are meditating that ultimately we want to cross over these planes of existence. We want to get free from the body, the mind, the intelligence, and come to the spiritual platform. And a soul is considered to be like a ray or particle of the sun. It is brilliant like the sun. So we say Savitur, Savitri. Savitur or Savitri means the sun. Or moreover, it actually means the consort of the sun, because it's feminine. The word Savitri is feminine. Refers to the consort of the sun, Savitri. But if you trace this back, the Shakti, who is the consort of the sun, the original Savitri is Srimati Radharani. Jiva Goswami explains in his commentary on the Brahma Gayatri. So we look at this Brahma Gayatri with a new light when we see from the Acharyas. They give us these secrets that, because generally one might say, what is the relation between Brahma Gayatri and Kam Gayatri? Because Kama Gayatri is in our line of Gaudiya Vaishnava. And we're meditating on Kama Gayatri, which is also given to us at the time of Diksha. And when we meditate on Kama Gayatri, we're meditating on Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan and their loving service and our loving service offered to them. This Kama Gayatri. Kama means the transcendental love, the fulfiller of all desires of the soul, the spiritual desires. So this Brahma Gayatri is one side of the coin. It is the same coin. On a coin you have heads and tails, or you have one side and other. So one end of our chanting we have Kam Gayatri. But we begin with Brahma Gayatri. But the Brahma Gayatri is simply, you can say, like you have the effulgence of the sun, the light of the sun, and you have the sun planet. So the Brahma Gayatri is the light of the sun. It is the effulgence coming from the toenails of Srimati Radharani. And that effulgence, of course, is coming from a form. And the form is revealed in the Kam Gayatri, which is a fulfiller of all desires of the soul. All hankerings and longings of the soul are fulfilled by perfect and pure chanting of the Kam Gayatri. So this explanation in a more detailed way is given by Jiva Goswami, that even the Brahma Gayatri is presenting Radha and Krishna. And he explains in great detail. So the comparison is like when you see the rays of the sun, if you follow the rays of the sun, if you follow the sun's rays and trace out their source, where are they coming from? You'll come to the sun planet. So the rays coming, the Brahma Gayatri is coming from is the rays of Srimati Radharani. It's like the effulgence from her toenails. Because it also contains the conclusion that's contained in the Kam Gayatri, but in seed form. So this is also mentioned here, this Om Bhur Bhuva Swa. So we'll stop there. Is there any comments or questions? The question is, in the Bhagavatam there are only a few stars described. When we look in the sky, there are billions of stars. And you want the Bhagavatam to describe each star? No, there's just like in a movie, there's a main star and there's so many guest stars. you know, there's the main feature. So the Bhagavatam is describing the main star. And all the extras, and the movie has so many extras and so many guest appearance. People come and do guest appearance or sing a song or do a dance. But Srimad Bhagavatam is simply the stories of the supreme star. Krishna is the supreme star. This very phrase is used by Mother Sachi. Mother Sachi, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to leave home, she understood that he was going to take sannyas, and she spoke to him. She said, Nakshatra Akshmi, or Aksha. She said, you are the star, you are the nakshatra of my eye. You are the star of my eye. This is in Chaitanya Mungo. She said, you are like the star of my eye. How can you leave? Because the eye requires light to see. Without light, you cannot see. So the life of Sachi Devi was her beloved son, Nimai Pandit, Vishwambara. She said, you are the star of my eye. How can you leave my sight? I will go blind. I cannot see without you. She used this word, nakshatra aksha, in Bengali version of that. So the real star of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita is Gauranga Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna. So Bhagavatam is simply, it's all about the main stars. We're not worried about the guest stars. Just like you go to a movie, so many people appear in a movie, but who do you remember? Remember the main stars, the hero, the heroine, and the movie. So the hero and the heroine, I mean the hero and the heroine, whatever the word, of this Srimad Bhagavatam is Radha and Krishna, isn't it? Krishna and Balaram are there also, they're also the two heroes. But mainly, Radha and Krishna are there. And a cast of thousands, sages, demigods, rishis, stars, moons, planets, they're all there, but the main stars are Radha and Krishna. So we are not in the science of astronomy, so we want to study all the billions and billions of stars. We want to study the science of Krishna, the loving science, the divine science. Because that science purifies, elevates, enervates, enthuses, and saturates the soul with divine happiness and ecstatic bliss. That is the science that we want to know and realize. Who could care less about the science of the stars unless you're an astrologer and you make your living that way? Of course, it's also very helpful. I'm not decrying that. But nevertheless, Krishna says, of all the sciences, I am the, in the Gita, Krishna says, of all the sciences, I am the supreme science of the self. Atma tattva gyan. Atma tattva gyan. Not nakshatra tattva. There's also nakshatra tattva. That's also a science, a truth, science of the stars. It's a tattva. But it is asat tattva. It's temporary knowledge. Any other questions? Why does devotees decry modern scientists? No, everything, you have to understand, we don't, in other words, we're sitting in this room by the mercy of the modern scientists. So many engineers, so many electrical engineers and construction engineers, and so many engineers and so-called scientists had to come and make this building and just put in electrical system and so many things. So we don't decry them, we engage them in Krishna's service. But we keep everything in its proper perspective. It's not that we want to offend the scientists. Prabhupada would often say that we give them credit where credit is due. We acknowledge their achievements. We utilize their achievements and contributions in Krishna's service. We acknowledge them. But we don't lavish undue praise upon them. We don't catapult a scientist into the position of God. Yes, yes, you will create life. I believe it. Because you made a toaster. Because you made a toaster and a blender and a microwave oven. Then surely next week you will create life. Here's $1 million for your research. I believe it. We don't go that far. We accept, but we don't accept them to the point of stupidity. We don't lose our rational, discriminative intelligence when dealing with someone. So as scientists, we accept him for what he's worth, and that's it. We don't offend anyone. We honor everyone properly according to their position. But in general, the problem with the world is that the scientists are culpable. The scientists, specifically the scientists, are responsible for the rampant atheism in the world. Because they perpetuate it, atheism.
They perpetuate atheistic views through their so-called science, through their books and productions. They actually say, there is no God. Where is God? Why doesn't he show himself? Why doesn't he stop the famine and stop this? There's no God. We can create rain. We can do this. We can do that. Who needs God? So therefore, by their preaching and their evolutionary theory and so many other unproved and bogus theories, they're leading people in atheism, which means away from God. And the result of scientists being in the helm of society or being the leading in a leading position of society is the whole world's going to hell. There's no happiness or peace or quality of life on any planet in this world, although there's so much science. So we have a particular, you could say, axe to grind with scientists as a whole, not say individually. Individually, there's many pious, religious, God-fearing, nice scientists that know their limitations and they work within them and they offer all respect and reverence to God. But the collective body of scientists together, their net production is simply atheism, which is destroying the fabric of humanity and destroying the very society and very planet that we're living in. The scientists are responsible for destroying the air and the water and the food and everything around us. So how can we have a high regard for the scientists? I mean, let's be a little intelligent. Why is the water polluted? Because of factories. Why are the factories? Because of science. Because people don't want to work the fields and work the plows and have cottage industry. Why is the air polluted? Because the scientists gave us cars and jets and everything so people can go very far and fast and do nothing except pollute the air in between. So for all the so-called good that scientists have given us, they've given us a million times more bad. You look at the ancient cultures of the world, China, India, Malaysia. Those cultures are thousands of years old and they're going along nicely without any science. And as soon as science and modern inventions and technology and trinkets enter into their society is ruined. The first thing that is ruined is the family unit. And when the family unit is ruined, the society is ruined. So science contributes to the ruination of the family unit by introducing television and modern transportation, all other things that break up the village and family life. So scientists, we don't have a lot of regard for them. Because we are proponents of theism. We are proponents of God consciousness. We believe in God and the Creator and all the harmony and synthesis of creation, which is also the highest science. And this science is not life-negating. This science is not polluting. This science is purifying and cleansing and natural and eternal. Pure and natural. The scientists are very quick to slap on their packages, 100% pure and natural. And you look on the backside of the package, you can't even pronounce the chemicals that are inside that package. Bialexyl-tolulene. You know, blah, 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 blah. And even they can't pronounce it, so they give it initials. BHT, XYZ, DDT. So they just say, this package has BHA, BHT, XYZ, DDT, but it's 100% pure and natural on the front side. That's what we call BS. But this, our spiritual scientists and our spiritual science is giving a pure thing, pure and 100% natural, close to God, close to nature, close to reality, because it's perfect and pure. And the scientists are simply presenting a contaminated view of the world and contamination wherever they express their view. They contaminate the air, they contaminate the water, the earth, the minds, the bodies, the souls of everyone. They introduce the IUD and the BC this and the birth control, and they just pollute all the women's bodies and minds with all their chemicals and pollute the whole relationships of family, so-called scientists, zero population growth. It's all a bunch of rot. They haven't done anything. Everyone's still dying, everyone's still getting diseased, everyone's still getting old, and scientists haven't done a damn thing to stop it. Except get a lot of praise and a lot of medals. But Krishna consciousness is the positive alternative, is the real solution. Because it connects people with the supreme scientist, who is perfect and flawless, Achyutananda. Achyuta, he is infallible. So we judge individuals on an individual basis. One last point is that in our movement we have many scientists. In our Krishna consciousness we have many scientists. We have PhDs in chemistry and organic chemistry, Damodar Swami. We have a whole wing of scientists that have degrees in mathematics and computer, all these things, PhDs, that are devotees with tilak and shaved head. But they realize that Krishna is a supreme scientist. And they want to upgrade science to the spiritual level. Science is all right if Krishna is there. But without Krishna or without God, it becomes nescience. Not science, but nescience. So we simply, our plea to the scientists is, please, add Krishna to your life. Explain Krishna, and you'll find all the answers to your puzzles. So they're not our enemies. We simply want them to become God conscious. So you help us. You're a scientist, or maybe you have scientist friends. So you become God conscious, and you help them become God conscious and introduce God into their lives. Because that's what our devotee scientists are using science to show God in science. Show God in organic chemistry. Show God in the computer. Show God in mathematics. And they're having good effect. They're having a huge conference in 1995 in January in Calcutta. 5,000 scientists, Nobel laureates, are coming to our Hare Krishna conference to talk about God. So that's 5,000 good, pious, religious scientists. But there's 50 million that are all atheistic. So some scientists are good, but most of them are bad. And because most of them are bad, the whole world's going wrong. So we have an issue with the bad scientists, with the atheistic side. We don't have issue with the good scientists. We respect them and honor them. They're in our fold. Part of our family are scientists. So it's not so black and white. It's very broad. Thank you for your nice question and attention. Srila Prabhupada ki, Hare Krishna.